Welcome to the Together PDX podcast. You're listening to our gospel gathering series, where we will be replaying valuable content from past events where local Portland leaders gathered to hear from authors, theologians, and scholars. We'd like to note that the views shared by our guests don't necessarily reflect those of the entire Together PDX team. We pray today's content enriches your day and spirit. Welcome back to the Together PDX podcast. I am coming at you with part 4 of 4 from our May 9th, 2025 gospel gathering in Portland, Oregon on the future church. This day was all about what it takes to reach people in a changing world, and this final talk is filled with the latest data to back that up. David Kinnaman is the CEO of Barna Group, a leading research and communications company that works with churches, nonprofits, and businesses ranging from film studios to financial services. Since 1995, David has directed interviews with more than 2 million individuals and overseen thousands of U.S. and global research studies. Today, he'll be bringing us the latest in this talk, A Hopeful Vision for the Church. I do want to note that David gave his talk live to an audience and had a sizable slide deck, so we've included that in the show notes. If you'd prefer to watch a video version of this talk that includes the slides, you can find that at togetherpdx.org/podcast. This is the final episode from Future Church with David Kinnaman.
We're going to talk about trends related to state of the church, some of the things that we're seeing in our research. And really our desire with you all today is to talk about a hopeful vision of the church. We have been in business for a long time, thinking about trends and challenges. Actually, as I mentioned, started as an intern working with George Barna back in 1995. And, you know, so much of our work is really trying to focus on the church in a changing culture. And sometimes we've taken some criticism for being kind of honest about the data that we see. And of course, we interpret it through our own lens, our own ability to try to help the church navigate a changing culture. But I'm here to describe to you today in the next number of minutes some incredibly hopeful things that God is up to. And you know, again, it's been a privilege to be able to look at some of the trends over the last number of years and see the manner in which they're changing, the kind of the context, the openness, the curiosity, and the ideas that the church can actually make a real difference in our changing time. Now, as you heard during my introduction, I'm a bit of a hiker, so one of my favorite things to do is to go out into the you know, the altitude of Colorado and get up on top of a 14,000 foot peak and, you know, really train. I'm looking forward to it. It's almost the summer. And so I'm trying to get back in shape into that. But this is one of my favorite books is called Subpar Parks, which is America's most extraordinary national parks and their least impressed visitors. Now, Amber Scher, the author of this book, literally scoured the internet. And, you know, I mean, people are people. I love being a researcher because people are very interesting and you see all sorts of interesting things. But these are the comments that people made having visited the national park. So these are their 1-star ratings. So, for example, Bryce Canyon is too orange and too spiky. Or Yosemite is trees block the view and there are too many gray rocks. Joshua Tree, this very unimpressed visitor said the only thing to do here is to walk around the desert. We could continue with the next set here where we've got, this is the Glacier National Park, which is too cold for me. Here in the Pacific Northwest, this is the North Cascades National Park. Too many mountains, trees, snow, etc. You just sort of, it's like the et cetera, just like all of it is just too much. How about Yellowstone, save yourself some money and boil some water at home. These are actual comments that people, you know, like they're having a pretty bad day to go into Yosemite and say too many gray rocks, you know. All right, here's my last one for this. This is Grand Canyon, a hole, a very, very large hole. This is from Sequoia National Park. There are bugs and they will bite you on your face. And maybe my favorite was Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, which is I didn't even get to touch lava. I don't think they know how lava works. All right, so here's the thing. After doing this for 30 years, you know, I've worked on different projects, Unchristian, You Lost Me, you know, Faith for Exiles. We're basically the receivers, and it is a privilege, but we are sort of the receivers of the church's 1-star ratings. You know, people come to Barna to tell us their stories. And so often we even heard this earlier today, this idea that people, when they don't experience a church in its fullness, and guess what? There are people in every church. My dad's a lifelong pastor, as I mentioned earlier. Ministry would have been great, except for the people, you know? And so you realize, having done this for a minute, that people's experience, they're often giving one-star church ratings to us. And sometimes it is a matter of, you know, are their perceptions accurate, or what are they actually telling us? But the reality is that we have so much to do to grow in this. Here, I'm going to give you some examples of some of the things that they tell us. These are some actual quotes, some verbatim quotes from our research. So I just go for the music, the rest annoys me. Or how about this one? It is outdated and somewhat judgmental. Or there was a scandal or misuse of church money. These are, again, actual verbatim quotes from our research. Here's the next round. We can see these, the members of the church are superficial and closed off. Or I felt kind of like a guinea pig. You can see we used AI for these posters, and AI still hasn't figured out how to do a 3D image of a hamster wheel there. How about these? The pastor is cold and acts like a dictator, right? Or this is my favorite. My church meets at my house and I don't want people over. Someone made the joke. That was the pastor's wife, I'm sure. Or the pastor, maybe even the pastor. All right. So here we all have this opportunity. The reason we're here today to talk about, the church here in Portland in the Pacific Northwest, it's such an honor to be here alongside, other speakers, to be here with you, some longtime friends. Again, I've had a chance to work with the Murdoch Foundation for a long time and just such great people and Kevin Palau and the gang. You know, I'm just so honored to be thinking alongside you. What would it look like for us to build a thriving church here in Portland, right? And what would it take for us to take people's one-star ratings, not in a consumer-minded way, but like to recognize that if we could help people experience a different kind of church, a different kind of flourishing, a different kind of connection to who God has made them to be, we might be able to make a huge difference in our society in some new and fresh ways. A lot of what has happened over the last 5 years is the veneer of our society has been peeled back, and people are asking, as we heard from other speakers this morning, like they're asking deeper questions, and they're ready for new ways of thinking together. So let's do it. So we've been working hard with some partners here on we're actually just in the first few months of what we're building called the Thriving Church Institute. We're taking 40 years of research and putting it in there. We've got a free download. I'll show you another QR code in a minute, but you can get a free download on kind of what it would be, what it would look like for us to build a thriving church, where we actually check in on the flourishing of the people that we're working with. And so we would encourage you to check that out, and you can become a member of the Thriving Church Institute. Again, we running a church, building a church, operating a church, leading alongside God's people, it is kind of rocket science. There are actually some basic things you've got to do. You've got to be able to focus on how to build this kind of thriving church. Okay, so I want to cover three cool trends, some hopeful trends. And I think it's, as I mentioned, a really exciting time for us to be doing ministry today, because there seems to be so many incredible ways that life is changing in some open ways. And we'll talk about that. But I want to start with the headline, which is that Jesus is back, friends. There is some really cool data. We've been waiting for a couple of years to just track this before we made a big deal out of it. But here is the trend. You saw this earlier with Ed's talk, but you'll notice that over the last 4 or 5 years, there has been a 12 percentage point increase in the percentage of Americans who say they've made a personal commitment to Jesus Christ that is still important in their life. That's absolutely worthy of some applause. Now, a couple things to think about. First, Christianity in America continues to be a mile wide and an inch deep. We live in a country where people tend to describe themselves as Christians or as committed to Jesus, but they don't necessarily know what it means to be a Christ follower. And we're here today to talk a little bit about what we might do to help connect those dots. But this tells us something really important, because these ideas that there is an inevitable inexorable decline of Christianity that it's just like, it's just a matter of fate that Christianity is going to be erased from this country. That narrative is not proving true, right? And that's an incredible finding. Who is behind the surge? We can look at some of these really interesting findings. You can look at the fact that younger adults are actually much more likely over the last 6 years, comparing 2019 to 2025. Look at the steep increase among young adults, among Gen Z and millennials compared to Gen X and boomers. There's been a little bit of increase among Gen X, especially among men. You'll notice that men across all generations are more likely to say they've made a commitment to Jesus than are women. But it's especially young people and especially young men who've increased in their commitment. Again, this isn't the same as measuring whether they are a resilient disciple. This is not the same about like how deep-rooted they are yet. But it tells us something about the openness, because perception is reality. People are willing to tick a box in our surveys that says they've made this commitment. And friends, you're here now to take that next step with an open generation, with an open society. For the last number of years, we've been actually seeing, we've been seeing some of these things moving along. We've been seeing signs of this coming. We did a study called The Open Generation with teenagers around the world. I had the great idea to call this the Global Teens Report. Super, super interesting. But the data showed us that this was an open generation. They were open to Jesus, open to the scriptures. They're open to anything and everything. That's the downside. That's the challenge. But it's an open generation. And then this idea of the spiritually open study that we had done alongside some other partners and friends, including Come Near. And so we were starting to track this. A friend of mine, Mark Matlock, we did this book called Faith for the Curious about spiritual curiosity. So we had been seeing these signs of spiritual openness, which was super interesting. Now, I want to go back a couple slides here to show you one more thing. Which is another interesting part of being a social researcher, is the ways in which sometimes people will tick the box in very unusual ways. So we'll find like atheists who say they're atheists, and they also tick a box. They answer, yes, I pray. You know, or it's like, it's unusual. You don't quite see how it adds up. And this is an example of that, where I'm comparing here just two questions in our surveys. Do you consider yourself to be a Christian? And have you made a commitment to Jesus that is still important in your life? And you'll notice that among non-Christians, you see we've got 126,000 interviews with U.S. adults as the total base, a huge sample size. And you'll notice that 29% in 2024 and 27% in 2025 of non-Christians say, yes, I've made a commitment to Jesus that is still important in my life. You've heard of the spiritual but not religious, right? I think this is an opening look at the Jesus but not Christian group, right? And again, I'm not saying that that's a good thing. It's just we have to recognize that people are open, and they're open, as Chuck Bomar described earlier. They're sort of recombinating. They're building their faith in an interesting way. They're building it out of a lot of different experiences. So the bottom line, guys, is that faith is bubbling out into some new places. This is a really cool moment for the church. We could also look at the fact that there's things like the Chosen and He Gets Us. You know, these are some things we can't describe definitively, that these are part of the rise of spiritual interest over the last number of years. But it certainly stands to reason that there's been some increased sort of attention on Jesus in a big public way. And then again, in addition to COVID, in addition to the fact that secularism in its own right doesn't answer the questions of our time. So there's some really cool things. So here's the second trend, the positive trend I want to talk to you about, which is this, that people seem, there are varying levels of comfortability with a person's faith story. And so you'll notice here, like we ask a question, are you willing to talk about your faith story and how do you relate to your faith story? Just a few interesting questions like this phrase, faith story. You can see a majority of Americans have some positive associations with that. And what's especially interesting is that among Black and Hispanic individuals in particular, there's more comfortability with the phrase faith story. And so I think, again, it tells us a little bit about the ways in which that sort of bubbles out of people's lives and the possibilities that we have for talking about this in our time. One of the other parts that we could talk about is this idea of how do thriving churches show up? And you can see that thriving church leaders help to redeem people's backstories. And so, you know, this is the story of Jesus interacting with the woman at the well. And he, you know, of course starts to talk with her and offers her living water. And she says, well, that would be great because I wouldn't have to come out here and get water all the time. And then finally they go through this sort of like personal discussion around her backstory. Later on, she says, come and see the man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? And this woman, you'll remember, was one of the first evangelists for Jesus, you know, life and ministry. And so there, people stream out of the town in order to understand what he might be like. And so this idea of how do we like take advantage of this opportunity is like, I believe there's a real openness, a real curiosity that people have. And it's an important way for us to have meaningful conversations with non-Christians is this opportunity of spiritual curiosity. Give you an example. When we ask people about whether they want certainty or openness, they more frequently say that they're interested in spiritually open than spiritually closed or certain experiences. And again, I just want to emphasize, this came out of the book called Faith for the Curious, my friend Mark worked on. But just these really interesting signs that there is a lot of openness today in our culture towards spiritual conversations. So things like your mind and soul can leave your physical body. 58% of all Americans believe that is possible. If you break a mirror, you will have bad luck. 17%. It's possible to be reincarnated at 32%. Mind reading is possible at 33%. A person's zodiac can have a direct influence on their personality at 35. Supernatural creatures such as fairies and ghosts are real. Some health conditions can be treated with psychic healing. Having a dream that comes true is not just a coincidence at 52%. It's possible to be possessed by an evil or supernatural entity. So really interesting, you know, like openness in our society. So these are three big things. Jesus is back. People are open to talking about their spirituality. There's an opportunity to talk about the curiosity that people have. They're curious. It's not a closed environment. What an absolutely incredible time to be on mission with Jesus. And I mean, just like, thank you, Jesus, for giving us life and breath and an opportunity to be inspired by your Spirit to meet a generation. Guys, like, we've been praying for these moments. Like, for 30 years, I've had to stand up in front of you guys and be like, well, the bad news is I got data. But we have some good news for you guys, right? Like, this is an incredible time to be on mission with Jesus. Let me try to summarize what I think are four just kind of key takeaways from this particular moment in time. My first comment is, like, this is an unpredictable moment of change. There are all the things that would be like the usual rules of how spirituality works, like women go more than men. They're all the things are being rewritten. That is an unprecedented and unpredictable moment of change. Number two, people are a patchwork of religious ideas. They're mixing and matching. They're pulling from different experiences. They're trying to, like, I think I heard this said once before. And this comes across all sorts of different areas. Like, even for people who are maybe glomming on to particular views on things. A friend of a friend was telling me about this where, you know, the woman won't pray in front of the family, like in an extended family gathering. And so, like, she was asked, like, why not? I said, well, I was told that, like, I'm not supposed to do that anymore. And, like, you know, all of these patchworks, all these ideas of, like, where we think we're supposed to, like, follow the path. And so people are actually at the same time really curious, and they can Google some really interesting things. We are in an especially important moment, for long-form learning. Right? Long-form learning. Let me just take like a little moment on this. So, you know, Portland Bible College, Talbot, Western Seminary. Like, I am a huge believer, and you'll see later on a little bit about this, some things I'll be talking about tomorrow. I'm a big believer that we need a different kind of educational muscle today. My daughter Emily, three kids, 25. She's 25. She's the biology major at Northwestern. My daughter Annika is doing nursing in Denver. My son Zach is a computer science kid. My wife and I, my late wife and I raised three geeks. Amazing kids, super smart. My daughter Emily was, we were talking about the Kendrick Lamar Super Bowl halftime show. So I asked her a bunch of questions. And so she's like, Dad, I've been waiting for this moment where you would ask me some questions. And so she had listened to like a series of podcasts about one of Kendrick Lamar's albums. And it was like 15 hours of just analysis of one album from Kendrick Lamar. Now, I just want you to like sit with the reality that this generation is able to and is interested in this sort of like long form content, right? Like we're seeing podcasts like, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours. There's like a real interest in that. And like one album of Kendrick Lamar is worth 15 hours of my daughter's time. But like would the Trinity be worth 1 hour of her time? Right. And part of the challenge is even in great churches like this and settings like this, we can't preach our way through all these complex topics. The church has to rise to the moment to help people put together more than just a patchwork of religious ideas. And I believe we can do that. I believe we can do that. That's part of the reason why I think education is so essential. Now, the third point I have here is spiritual renewal is possible. And again, this notion that, and we're seeing this in other studies in the UK, in other places around the world, there is an openness and that spiritual renewal is possible. And younger generations are leading the way. Guys, this is some of the things that we have been praying for. You know, when Jesus says, when I return to earth, will the Son of Man find faith on the earth? And the last couple of decades, it hasn't looked like the trends were pointing in a good direction. But this tells us that there is something profound that's happening, that God, the Spirit of God, is awakening this next generation and opening hearts in new and fresh ways. And my question to you, as we think about what to do to respond to this, isn't like, well, let's just sort of like, we'll usher it in. The Holy Spirit is going to do this. And, you know, do we love our traditions more than our children? And I think they're going to take the church and do some things in ways that are going to profoundly change the way we think about the experience of what it means to follow Jesus today. That's going to be a good thing by and large. All right. So those are some positive things. Let's just, again, out of a spirit of thanking the Lord, like let's just acknowledge and let's applaud that this is the kind of moment we have been waiting for. Jesus, we are so grateful to you, Lord. We want to see you move in this new generation. Like, Lord, move in the hearts of our kids and our grandkids and those that are closest to us. Prepare the way for this church to be faithful with this new generation. Hopeful trends. All right. I believe that hope also has to be set against the caution of our times. And we do know a thing or two about how to caution you as church leaders about some of the things that are challenging. So let's just hit some of these things kind of quickly. But young women, we should be paying attention to their testimony because they are increasingly and surprisingly churchless and unaffiliated and disengaged. And this is an important moment for us. You can see this is one data point that just talks about Gen Z teenagers and Gen Z young adults. In both cases, it is the women who are more likely to identify as religiously unaffiliated. We don't see this in the data, not for 30 years. Ed was talking about this a little bit earlier. This is the first time we see some of these shifts. It's not just our data. Notice this among volunteers. So the green is 2020. The purple is 2024. Volunteering at church overall has declined, but who has it declined most among? Women. They don't want to just be your free labor for your programs. They want you to grapple with them as human beings. I'm seeing some heads nod around the room, not among the men. Look at the volunteering for nonprofits, even among regular nonprofits, not just churches. There's been a decline. So here's a couple things. I'm just going to put these couple slides up as a way of maybe sparking some conversations in the coming days for you and among people you care a lot about. I actually asked a lot of women and young women and my kids, my daughters, some of my female colleagues to help me with these two slides because I don't think I can just sort of say, well, here's what the women are concerned about, but here's a couple things that we should be paying attention to. So this is just in general in our culture, some of the challenges that young women are experiencing and just sort of their lived experience. So the greater importance on educational achievement and sort of professional advancement. They don't know if they want to or would prefer to rely on getting married. You know, so there's a romantic recession, changing dating attitudes and practices, declining priority and reliance on marriage, a later in life marriage and childbearing, just a lot of interesting demographic changes that are taking place across all cultures of the West. Being a 20-something today is very different than being a 20-something two, three, four decades ago. And we have to just recognize that that is a different kind of phase of life. In the past, friends, we invented things like youth ministry and youth camps and youth publishing and youth engagement events because there's a thing called being a teenager that for most of human history was not really a sociological thing. So we've been very innovative around how to minister to teenagers in the church's history. We need to innovate again about how to minister to 20-somethings in some very, very particular ways. When I did a book called You Lost Me, do you know the most common like pushback that I got from pastors about young people walking away from the church? What would you imagine people might say? Y'all are listening very intently, but also the Chick-fil-A is doing its job. What do you think people would say about people walking away from church as a 20-something? They'll come back. When they have kids. When they get married. I heard that thousands of times. Like, this is the same as every generation. Once they get married and have kids, they're going to come back. What kind of idea is that, guys? Again, like, we're going to talk in a minute about the boomers leaving the church. Is that the same idea you guys have? We'll just wait till they have kids? Just wait till they have grandkids? Like, the gospel doesn't give you permission to target certain demographic groups that are convenient for your business model as a church. So today's 20-somethings are not the same 20-somethings of a previous generation. Stop treating them that way. Today's young women are not the same as the young women that you might have interacted with a generation ago, so stop treating them that way. And again, I think we have to look at this data. Like, we should be really, really enthusiastic about the fact that young men are finding a place in the church. But friends, who will be the next generation of moms and grandmoms and women and single women in the church who can lead the way? Here are some of the things that we see about young women in the church. Just a few things that we've heard through the data, through our experiences: a perceived gap in maturity among Christian men, connected, smart. They don't want to be your church's free labor. They're often the victims of abuse. So how you respond is critical because they're watching on behalf of themselves and others. They want a coherent vision, for the role of women. Again, I'm not even here to necessarily advocate like, hey, everything, I realize there are important differences in the way different churches approach this, but they want a coherent vision and language. They want to be involved. Their desire for community and connection, not just content. We did a study for the Mom Co, where we asked women, what is it, moms, what is it that you want from a church? And do you know what was sixth on the list? Preaching and teaching. First was connection. They want community. So they're socially integrated with many trusted sources for wisdom. So they're coming, like my daughter Emily, you know, like 15 hours of Kendrick Lamar podcast. There's all sorts of available wisdom in our society through social media and other sources of like, what does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a mom? And will they find that the church has relevant and important and essential ways of being a human, being a woman in the world today? So the next sort of negative challenge that we have to relate to is this idea of the mental well-being crisis that COVID has pulled back the covers on. It's a major challenge to human flourishing, especially among younger generations. This data point shows us a little bit about the transition from being a teenager to a young adult, that almost all of the negative self-perceptions increase, almost all of the positive self-impressions decrease. You can see deeply cared for by those around me. So this, again, highlights that hard transition, the speed bumps, that happened between being a teenager and a young adult, and some of the formative ways that we have to work alongside this generation. I think it's interesting that this particular section in Scripture in 2 Timothy comes Not just like as a general sort of proverb or Ecclesiastes saying, this comes in the context of relational mentoring, doesn't it? As Paul is writing to Timothy, he's saying, remember your mother and your grandmother. That's earlier in that section. And he's like, remember the same faith that they have is beating in your heart. Remember your giftedness. Remember these ways in which we're called to be, we can talk about this in just a minute. We're called to be out serving on mission with Jesus. And then he says, God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity or anxiety, but of power and love and of self-discipline. And this comes, this reminder of being a non-anxious presence comes in the context of a relationship. The third trend that we just talked about is this idea of boomers. And they're kind of retiring in every way, even from your church. So they're increasingly and surprisingly churchless and unaffiliated. Here's one example of that. But you'll see that boomers are actually attending less frequently each month. These are active churchgoers. They come 1.4 times per month. It's actually millennials and Gen Z are coming 1.7, 1.6 times per month. And it's just interesting that, you know, you can see the impact of COVID. Boomers and Gen Xers were coming just about one time a month. But you can see there's not been the same sort of recovery of church attendance among the boomers. There's still that light blue line. So we've got to sort of figure out how to connect with boomers and the aging well portion. So a lot of times we focus a lot on the younger generations. But let's not forget the critical needs, the spiritual issues and life stage issues that boomers have. Okay, the fourth thing to think through here is that pastors realize that they need to build leaders and contributors rather than spiritual consumers, but they often struggle to do so. I'll just give you a couple pieces of data on this. I think this is a really fun bit of donut charts for you here, but 92% of pastors say that they prefer lay-driven initiatives to church programs. 96 say, for my church to be healthy, I prefer lay people to take on more responsibility, which is pretty cool. You think that would be the case. But look, only 9% of churches say my church is very strong at developing new leaders. So, you know, there's obviously some gap, and we're here again to talk about the importance of education and the importance of training and identifying and deploying younger leaders. You'll notice that there's also a real concern among pastors that it's becoming harder to find mature young believers who want to become pastors. I do think we're going to face in the coming decade a real crisis of people that want to be vocationally and professionally in the pastorate. And then you see that my church puts a significant priority on training and developing the next generation of leaders, a huge decline even in the last couple of years. So those are some of the challenges that we face. And I want to just point out that our team has been producing such incredible work. There's the Motherhood Today, the Aging Well Report, the Gen Z study, discipleship and community. We've been working hard alongside our partners to try to understand more about the testimony of people and the challenges and opportunities that they have. But again, all of this is available inside of a product we call Barna Access. All those reports are available for free. If you're interested, we would love to have you become a subscriber and a part of that, but you can get the Thriving Church Institute and all of those reports for free inside of Barna Access Plus. So feel free to take advantage of that. All right, you guys doing good? You hanging in? All right, let's talk about making the most of this moment. I've got a few more things I want to show you, and then we'll bring up the panel and talk a little about what this means for our ministry today. I think it was cool that like three of you were doing great, and the rest of you were like, how many more slides do you have? The answer is 72. I've got 72 more slides. Yes, all right. We're going to bring up the energy with statistics. I love it. all right, so how do we make the most of this moment? First of all, I think we should be prayerful to the Lord that the harvest is really ripe. There is a real sense from me and from our team and from other researchers that there is a moment of spiritual opportunity that does not come along very often. I have not seen it like this. I remember being on a phone call in my first couple of years working at Barna, and it was a mainstream media call, and Dr. Bill Bright, the late Dr. Bright, was on, and I think someone from another ministry, I can't remember, and me, and George Barna was traveling, and so it was like USA Today and other kinds of mainstream medias. It was this like forum that had been arranged by a publicity team about just talking about spiritual trends. And so Dr. Bright came on, and again, he was an awesome guy, but he was saying, yeah, I believe revival is like sweeping the nation. And after a couple of minutes, the reporter said, well, let's talk to that Barna guy, that Barna kid, you know, like, what does the data show? And I had to be honest, that's to say, you know, with all respect, we're not seeing any real trends that would point to kind of revival, right? Like we were in the middle of some of these, like, every year decline. And really, you know, we've only seen a lot worse the last number of decades. But friends, we are actually seeing now, as I've shown you, real increase. Like, the idea that the church is going to die is never been true, but especially now we're seeing this opportunity. And you'll notice that Jesus, you know, as Matthew is recording this, he's putting this particular quote in the context of how he perceives Jesus having compassion on a confused and helpless generation. And even as we're talking about a lot of the positives, friends, like, my job as a researcher gives me a front row seat to some of the challenges that this generation has, to the pressures of growing up in what I call digital Babylon, where these crazy tools know us better than we know ourselves. You know, like, for all of human history, pornography has been possible, but now at the swipe of a finger, this generation and we in this generation have instant access to some of the most explicit images in human history. How does the gospel apply to that? It's not that pornography is new. It's not that sexual brokenness is new. That's the same. But what's new is the context. And we've been working with different partners, a group here locally in Portland called Pure Desire. We did a new study with them a year ago called Beyond the Porn Phenomenon, where we keep seeing the absolute havoc that a sexualized culture wreaks on this generation. That you know, sexually explicit images are being promoted to younger and younger people. 10, 11, 12 years old. That women are more involved in sexual pornography than they would have been a generation ago. Again, because of the levels of access. All this is part of this digital Babylon context. But people are confused and helpless. And so what can we do about that? Well, I've got three ideas to help just kind of close our time. But the first is that I believe the church offers a grace-filled message of hope in Jesus. And again, because of Jesus' life and death and resurrection, we can be transformed into new and different people, a whole new creation. And that's been my journey. That's been the journey of so many of us. But we need to instill confidence in people today. Like, I hope you would take these slides and share them on Sunday morning, share them in your schools, instill confidence in people that the gospel is alive and at work. You with me? I mean, we got to, like, remind people, like, this is still good news. And what's crazy is that when we look at the trends, it's actually that, you know, we've been showing a lot of movement, but look at, there's not much movement in the percentage of all U.S. adults or Christians who say they have a personal responsibility to share their faith. This has to change. So we have to, like, look at the fact that this is a generation hungry for answers, and inner peace is, we believe, a new kind of apologetic. In fact, we didn't just make that up. Here is the data. We asked people who are spiritually open, when you consider your spiritual beliefs, what would you say you're looking for? And you'll see that inner peace was number one on that list, shortly ahead of hope and healing and forgiveness and purpose and truth. This is a generation that is acquainted with sorrow, and they have a language for trauma. They have a language for their interior lives. And I believe this is a great opportunity for us as the church, because we have the ultimate, the Prince of Peace. We have a therapeutic community and a counseling community, and we have a way of understanding the real issues people face and also the deep spiritual issues that people face in light of the gospel. All right, here's the second thing we can do to put some feet to this, which is that we in an era of isolation and loneliness, the church offers essential community. What is it that moms are looking for from your church? Community. We did a study with a faith-driven entrepreneur about entrepreneurs. What is it that entrepreneurs are looking for from your church? Community. Like, a community under the authority of Scripture, you know, in light of what Jesus has done in the world. But they don't just need more content. They need community. Now, let me just show you. We worked on the study. I showed you the cover of it a minute ago called Discipleship and Community. And I love it when we start to uncover things that show a pathway forward beyond just the kind of, like, the problems or people are yes or no on Jesus. But check this out. So I know that the writing is a little bit small, but this is looking at three different kinds of relationship connections within your church. So small groups, households, mentorships. you can read the fine print there, but these are not just like, you know, are you part of a household, but are you part of a household that prays together and cares about each other's spiritual well-being? You'll notice that only 33% of all churchgoers say that's true of them. That should surprise us. It's interesting because that's actually a little bit lower than the percentage of churchgoers who are in a small group at 38%. And then 31% are in mentoring relationships that make the individual a better person and invest in their success. Now, here is where all of that sort of pays off. You'll see there's about 12% of churchgoers who are experiencing all three of those relational connections. But this is pretty cool. When we look at the differences between those who are in all three of those different kind of relationally rich environments, look at the differences in the green than those who have none of those three. Pretty big difference. Okay, let's do a little memory verse with me. You ready? It'll wake you up a little bit. You ready? A correlation does not equal causation. Ready? Correlation does not equal causation. So we can't say that it's the relationships that do it, but we can say that there is a really strong correlation here and that we should invest in building deeper relationships because they seem to supercharge, discipleship. So what could you do? You could ask things like, you know, are you in these kinds of households? Are you in these kinds of small groups? Are you in these kinds of mentoring relationships? Again, what's happening on Sunday mornings, I'm going to just say that I think we've kind of organized the church around an event management business. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we have to take the next step now to orient around gospel-driven relationships on mission with Jesus to help go redeem and restore a lost world to the purposes that Jesus had them. We can help people understand their story, like that woman at the well. Come meet a man who told me everything I had ever done, who helped me understand my anxious thoughts, who helped me understand how to find peace. And these are ways we can do that. All right, here's my third idea and final idea, which is this, that in an era of tech-driven personalization, the church could offer and does offer at its best a place to be known and to find purpose. This is another really exciting data point that we came across a year or so ago. I'll skip the top portion just in the interest of time, but the bottom portion is super interesting. Have you ever taken an assessment inventory or test that was designed to help you understand your giftings, abilities, or skills? And among practicing Christians, I mean, we didn't define what those were, but that would include things like the Strengths Finder and the Enneagram and the Spiritual Gifts Test and the Myers-Briggs and, you know, the DISC and the what kind of an animal are you and the whatever, right? All right, so it's only 30% of practicing Christians who have taken one of those. This surprised me. I thought it would be like 99%. I thought it would be like, we all do this. But I believe we have an incredible opportunity to help people figure out their giftedness. And this comes to back to some of the things we've been studying for the last decade or two. As we interview the one-star ratings, you with me? As we interview the people who walk away from the church, we hear these painful stories of like a young woman who we interviewed in one of our focus groups. And she said, you know, I felt very disconnected from the church. Well, what about the youth pastor? The youth pastor, he was paid to be my friend. He's just part of the church marketing department. That's his job description, is to like be friendly. This generation actually has a really interesting like meter about the professionals in ministry, because they're like, you're kind of paid to do this. What's an application? Have as many lay-driven stories as possible for people who aren't just paid to be Christian. There's spiritual power in our testimonies. We overcome by what? The blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. So have people give their testimonies to go around the criticism that you're just a really good professional communicator about a thing called Jesus. You can figure this out. Figure out a way to connect to people's hearts beyond the barriers that they always build around the truth. And one of them is another super heartbreaking part of what we've been discovering is that, you know, about half of all the teenagers, Christian teenagers in our country, want to get involved in science, technology, engineering, and math careers. That's my three kids, 52%. Do you know what percentage of youth pastors have talked about science, technology, engineering, and math in the last year, less than 0.5%. There's a huge divide between the careers people are interested in and entrepreneurs and creative careers and science-driven careers. We have a huge opportunity to invite people into the giftedness that they have and to actually help them know who they are. So let me just tell you a quick story that I think might help connect the dots about one of my friends named Micah. He just started working with me at the company, but was the former executive pastor of the church that I've attended in Fort Worth called Antioch. And on a Sunday, he was driving home from church, and his wife, Rachel, calls him and says, "Micah, our Amazon account has been hacked. We have been, like, people, there's like more than $1,500 worth of stuff that has been put into a cart and has been checked out." And Micah's like, "Hold on, hang on, I'll be home in a couple minutes. Let's figure this out. Did you stop?" She's like, "Yeah, I stopped the credit cards. I've put a hold on the purchase button, but I can't figure this out." And so Micah was like, "Okay, so wait, $1,500, that's a lot of stuff. Where are they shipping all this?" And Rachel's like, "That's the weird thing, is they're shipping it to our house." And, it turns out that Mason, there on the left, he can't even read, but he was on his iPad in reading time, all locked down, but just off the Kindle app or the Nook app, whatever, or the Kindle app, he had found a backdoor into the store and had purchased, in the matter of like 30 minutes, $1,500 of stuff. So he had bought, I mean, to give him credit, he bought like 32 dresses for his sisters. He can't even read, but he knows how to work the quantity selection. He had bought like wands and scepters. He had bought blocks and Lego. He's like, when Micah, his dad, confronted him, he said, "Dad, don't worry, I got you a water bottle." He was hooking up everybody. Now, this is just a really cool thing, because, like, now Mason is already showing signs of being a young entrepreneur. I mean, maybe a convict, but also just a couple weeks later, just to prove the point, he had gone back into the store. They had luckily stopped all the purchase power, but you'll notice he put the Backyard Discovery Skyfort playground, that's $2,299, and he put two in the cart. And a $12.99 window art sun catcher. So, you know, just for his mom. All right. So here's the thing. I have spent the last nearly 15 years since sort of like really focusing in on the you lost me phenomenon of studying and understanding the stories of young people and their experiences with the church, right? Like, I want to be part of the church, but don't even want to have people over, or they're one-star ratings, right? So I believe that we have a chance with this new generation to help them understand their giftedness, to help a kid, even and especially at 5, 6 years old, like Mason, to start understanding God has created you to be an entrepreneur, to figure out, like, you could be in technology. You can figure out how to help keep the Amazon account secure from little kids like you. Right? And so this comes back to our final point, just in terms of this thriving church mindset, but a thriving church leader know and catalyze people's gifts. And I want to take you back to Paul's writing to Timothy. This whole section is so beautiful and rich. Like, before this, he talks about the tears when we last parted, and the warmth and empathy, and the being known. You get a letter from your mentor, and he remembers you. He remembers the moment that you parted. This is all in 2 Timothy 1, verses 3 and 4. But then he goes on and says, "I also remember that your genuine faith. You share the same faith as your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, women, not men. I know the same faith continues strong in you, and this is why I remind you to fan into flames the spiritual gifts that God has given you when I laid my hands on you. So I just think this is a template, friends, for how we think about ministry to this next generation. So I think about what would it look like for us to help. You know, we don't have our students here today in this afternoon. They heard there were going to be a lot of PowerPoint slides. So, you know, God bless them. But think about how we like help remember their spiritual legacy. What has brought them? And even if they don't have a Christian legacy, even better, God's redeeming and redeemed their stories. And then to commission them, and even the kind of the physical impartation of like, we're going to commission you. We lay hands on you so that your gifts could be given to the world. And later on, you know, in this section, he's like, you know, we remember our suffering. We suffer on behalf of the gospel. This whole little section is a beautiful reflection on the kinds of things that we might want to put in place, for ministry too. And with this next generation, they shouldn't come back and just say like, I remember being like, so, you know, in my zone every Sunday, just sitting there in the pew. That should be the table stakes, but they should be like, I actually figured out a little bit more, maybe a lot more of who I am, what I'm made to do. We have an opportunity not to let a young man like Mason just figure out what it means to be an entrepreneur from all the podcasts, what the world has to offer. He's going to go out and change the world. Will we be with him or not? All right, so here's three ways to think about those areas, which is that we belong to Jesus. We are instill confidence in the gospel. We find that the church is a place of community, not just content. We belong to each other. And then we unleash people's giftedness in a really cool and profound way, that our gifts belong to the world. And friends, I believe this is the kind of vision, the hopeful vision of the church that God is calling us to. In this hopeful moment, you should be inspired by what God is doing and the opportunity to rethink and rebuild and to reimagine what God is able to do when you get to know a young person, when you partner with the Spirit. I know it's discouraging. My dad is a lifelong pastor. Gary Kinneman was a friend of this church for a long time, my dad, Gary. And, you know, he would often talk about the frustrations of ministry. He would build these model railroad sets, and he's a great, you know, it's one of his, among the great qualities that he has. He had a lot of great hobbies. Ministry was not just his only passion in life, and that made him a lot healthier person. But he had a wicked sense of humor where he would talk about the frustrations that he would have with people in ministry. And he would say, you know, like, I sometimes just feel like I want to like break one of his little plastic characters off my railroad and just lay him across the tracks. And just, you know, like name them one of my elders for just hypothetically, and then just run the train over their body as fast as I can. You know, that's kind of the way my dad would joke. That's my dad. He didn't take it too seriously, I guess you could say. All right. So where is God calling you to a bigger vision of the church? And I just want to say, this is my little testimony over the last number of years. Is that my church, the little church that I go to in Fort Worth, Antioch, and Pastor Jamie Miller and Micah, the Lord has helped to put my heart back together after the loss of my wife. And we have a chance, I think, to give people an experience of God's presence where Jesus himself comes to say, you are a son, you are a daughter, you have great purpose in me, not because of what you can do, but because of what I've called you to. You're a masterpiece created in Christ Jesus to do good works. Friends, this generation is ready for us to call them to be the masterpieces that they are created to be. And it's more than just a little sermon. Nothing wrong with great sermons. In fact, that is, like, again, the table stakes, that Jesus himself walks among us as we preach him. But we have a chance to invite this generation into a deeper, more personal way of being known than any algorithm could ever possibly know us. And that's the invitation that I want to give you, that Jesus is our maker, our redeemer, our defender, and our friend. This is the hopeful vision that I think we can have for this next generation.
Wow, data is not always uplifting, but I love David's expert perspective on this, and that he can come out on the other side of a job like this filled with hope. What a good word. This was the fourth of four episodes from our one-day event in Portland, Oregon in May 2025. If you haven't listened to the other episodes with Ed Stetzer, Lisa Fields, and Tanina Maddox, I can't recommend them enough. And if you're in the Portland metro area, please join us in person next time. We do these gospel gatherings about once a quarter, and it is so much fun to attend live with your community. Our next one will be in September with Andy Crouch, and registration is now open. Find out more about this and find the recordings from all of our previous gospel gatherings at www.togetherpdx.org. Thanks for listening.